Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. The Jug Life Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like weightlifters, powerlifters, and CrossFitters get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/juglife and use the promo code JUGLIFE to support the show and see if you qualify. Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined, as always, by Mercurial Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty well. How you doing?
And our guest today, the Muscle Doc. Is that because you have a lot of muscles or because you work on muscles?
I like the latter. Yeah. I like the latter. I don't feel like I'm big enough together, but we're working towards that.
But the Muscle Doc, Jordan Shallow. Jordan, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I feel like I need a mug now. No, I feel like I should have got the mug.
The time for mugs has come and gone.
Missed the boat.
Notice the new Juggernaut mugs, Jug Life, milligrams and kilograms. Got a couple more up on the website too, so go ahead and check those out. Today's episode is brought to you by Perturbation and Push Presses. It's a lifestyle. And we're going to be talking to Jordan about all sorts of things. Really stumbling over my words here, but we're going to talk to him some about the role of supportive equipment for powerlifting. We're going to talk about, you know, what sets him apart from maybe other practitioners, as well as some projects that he's working on and some exciting new roles that he's taking on and sort of advances in his career. So before we get into all that, let's kind of just get to know you. Jordan, can you tell us a little bit about your education and how you, both education and maybe some athletic background?
Yeah, I start with the school. Did my undergraduate in Canada, so exercise science, community health, and then moved out to California for chiropractic college. Five, six years ago, graduated from Palmer West, and then went into practice almost 2 years ago to the day. I've been in practice.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. It's been a ride. And that's why I'm now recording a podcast for a living. So I practice at a Boss Barbell Club in Mountain View, California. So work a lot in the strength sports community, Olympic lifting, powerlifting, CrossFit, things like that. So.
And you compete in powerlifting yourself? You just had quite a good meet?
Yeah. So I compete 110 kilo, classic raw. Just came off, that would have been my fifth meet, Rewalk record breakers. So I totaled 1901 at 242 in wraps. So yeah.
How did that 1901 break down?
Oh, sure. So squat 705, bench 441, and pull 755.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was fun.
So before we get into more topics with Jordan, we're going to take a quick break for a Strength History Minute, and then we'll be back with Dr. Jordan Shallow.
Mark Henry is undoubtedly one of the most talented strength athletes of all time, and someone that many will wonder about if his talent was never truly fulfilled. Standing 6'4" and at the peak of his lifting, weighing just over 200 kilos, Mark Henry was always destined to be big, said to have been 5'5", 255 pounds in just the fourth grade. He's a two-time USAPL national champion, 1995 and 1997, even pulling 815-pound deadlift in high school. He finished his powerlifting career with a 432.5-kilo squat in wraps, 410-kilo, 904-pound deadlift, and a 1,060-kilo total, 2337. He was also a three-time national champion in weightlifting, a two-time Olympian representing the U.S. in both Barcelona and Atlanta, with PRs of 180 in the snatch and 220 kilos in the clean and jerk. This gives him one of the three strongest super totals of all time, along with Misha Kaklaev and John Cole. You probably know Mark Henry better as a professional wrestler in the WWF and WWE, but after wrestling for several years, he decided to try his hand back in strength sports, winning the first Arnold Classic Strongman Championship in 2002, what is said to have been done with only about 6 weeks of intensive training and down 40 to 50 pounds from body weight from the strongest point in his career. He is a remarkable talent across multiple disciplines and definitely one of the greatest of all time.
All right, we are back from the Strength History Minute, joined today by the muscle doc, Dr. Jordan Shallow. First topic I want to get into, and in the lengthy process that I go through to organize these episodes, I was making an outline about 5 minutes before your arrival.
Evidently.
And yeah. Mostly just stealing, this is always how long they are, mostly just stealing topics from your own podcast. And one that jumped out to me, and I think our listeners will be very interested in, and something I get questions about quite frequently, are in particular the role of the belt and, you know, what purpose a belt serves towards training, what, like, how it's actually creating an effect, and when maybe it's not appropriate to use one, or if people can benefit from not using one. So just expound on that.
Yeah, please. No, I think it's really common because it becomes, it's a tool until it's a crutch. With the belt in powerlifting specifically, it can lead to a lot of imbalances. So the belt, people say it makes like your core weak. It's actually not true. It actually makes your rectus abdominis stronger. It has something, a medium in which to contract against. The dangerous part with the belt, when it comes to like building a dissonance between your top end strength with a belt and without, like if you're, you know, I like to keep a rule about 75%. So as my top end strength increases, also where I put my belt on in my training should also increase. So I always keep, it'll never be 1-to-1. I'm not like a Yuri Belkin or anything like that. So for me,
this is my fucking belt.
Yeah, and I'm not a believer in that. I mean, to each their own, like the outcome is to lift more weight, right? And if you got to play the game, win the game. So for me, if I'm allowed to wear one, it's going to help me, I'm going to wear it. But from a, like a health, air quote health standpoint, it actually weakens the external oblique. And if you think about the anatomy of the external oblique, it makes a lot of sense. Kind of like comes, the external oblique starts way further back than a lot of people realize. So it kind of wraps around and makes this anterior oblique sling and attaches into the opposite side adductors. So what you're going to see a lot of times with guys that are reliant on belt, more so in like the super heavy divisions, guys that get like sports hernias from squatting really heavy, that's usually the underpinning issue, is that they get so reliant on the belt that it weakens the external oblique because it diminishes the need for it. And the tertiary action of the external oblique, so it's a lateral flexor and opposite side rotator, so it basically does that. That's me shortening my right side external oblique. But it also posteriorly tilts the pelvis. So if you think about like the heavier weight class guys that carry a lot of weight anterior to their lumbar spine, it's going to put them in that pelvic tilt position. You're going to put a lot of stress on like the fascia of the abdominal cavity from the inside out. And then you're going to weaken the one thing that's going to tie it all together and circumferentially disperse that pressure. And then I find it more so with sumo lifters, but you don't see a lot of heavy guys pulling sumo. But still, that imbalance over time is usually one of the underpinning causes of like sports hernias. So like from a long game injury prevention standpoint, a lot of times buy-in is really hard. Like people, if they don't see a reason in the future that it's like, oh, I'm, you know, you might potentially get hurt, but it's like a broad blanket statement. But if you can say like, hey, this is, someone's going to cut you open, they're going to put mesh in your stomach and you're not going to be able to squat for 4 months, it's like, oh, okay, maybe then that's enough severity to get some buy-in. But I mean, it improves interabdominal pressure. I find it's either used at too low of a threat, like it's put on too low too early, like too light of weights, or it's put on too tight. And a lot of people think, like most things in weightlifting or the fitness community in general, that it's dose dependent. Like they cinch it like a corset, where it's like you want to get the most out of like any internal stimulus that you can before you start adding external stimulus to it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that's a big thing. It's like, well, use your breath, use your diaphragm.
Yeah. A very common cue that I'll give for the squat at seminars and stuff is to push air down and out through the oblique to try and make their waist as wide as possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, people want, they all want to be cool with their six packs and stuff. But if they want to squat a lot, they need to make themselves look more like me.
Yeah, absolutely. Which,
I mean, here most are beyond, you'd be beyond so any lucky hope. But in terms of the wide waistedness, it's not a coincidence that wide waisted people are often better squatters. So being able to generate that type of pressure and push out into the belt rather than the belt pulling you in.
Yeah.
Does the size of the belt make a big difference?
Not to me. I mean, I come from like a real bro background to training. Like powerlifting was something it's a product of my environment. Started working at Boss and it was almost like the Roger Bannister effect. Mm-hmm. Roger Bannister, the guy that ran the first 4 minute mile, where it's like, I looked up at like the chalkboard at Boss and I was like, So you're telling me if I need to get my name up there, I need to start breaking world records. But then you start to see it every day and you start to normalize it. So it's like when Roger Bannister ran the first 4 minute mile, I think the next weekend, like four guys ran it. So it's just like powerlifting for me was like, I go to a commercial gym, put on three plates and everyone's like, oh, like relax, take notes. And it's like when you go there and there's some like 165 pound guy that's like, you done with that? Like, thanks.
I think that effect actually applies to Chad and I, because last night we witnessed a guy snatch 220 kilos. So I'm guessing, do some math, carry the one. I'm probably right around 210 right now.
Osmosis.
You might be 215.
Yeah.
via Roger Bannister effect.
That's exactly how it works. Yeah. Just sit in a room with strong people and you'll be fine. Yeah.
So the belts can help the abs become stronger, but if people can also become too reliant on the belt, you're saying, is that a improper bracing pattern within the belt, or you know, mistiming the use of it? Do you think that there's an application for a month of training, any extended period of time training purely without a belt?
Oh, sure. And I think doing it in a designated block where you don't have the crutch at all in your training is where you're going to be able to get that to be most effective. It's like when I put wraps on, that allows me to overload my quads. Mm-hmm. When I put my belt on, it allows me to like overload my upper back. So it's like every time we put in one of these implements, we can allow to overload something else. So for me, and this is something I like a principle I apply to rehabilitation all the way up to peaking strength. It's just scaling stimulus, right? The intensity always wants to be, I always want the intensity to be high. It always should be feel difficult, because if it's not, you're not going to make the requisite change you're after as far as the adaptation of the stimulus that you're trying to adapt for. So when it comes to the belt, like right after a meet, I'll have had my belt on for the longest period of time, because I'll be working, my working sets will be at a percentage which dictates that to have the belt on. 75 plus is pretty much my last, I don't know, 8 weeks, maybe even longer than that. So I've had a belt on for the better part of 3 or 4 months. So for me to scale stimulus, I'm going to go beltless, which is going to immediately limit my potential to lift across pretty much all three lifts. I wear a belt to bench just to cue my breathing. But deadlift specifically, but now I need to look at different stimulus to make it intense. Because if I just go beltless, like, okay, I'm really trying to push this now as something that I can build to a point where when I have the belt on, I'm not baseline down, bring it to baseline down. I can actually build strength. So then that relative point of when I have to put that belt back on again, and I know it's going to be at a higher number because the percent of the top end that I'm working from is going to be higher, that I'm going to be able to match that. So I need to get more creative than just taking my belt off, right? Mm. So a lot of staples, I mean, I'm just coming off a meet now, so I'm going through my like 6 week beltless training block, and it's the big staple, the one I try and progress and peak from a strength standpoint. And again, the max weights are going to be so minimal to what I can pull off the floor, but I'll go three inch beltless stiff legs, and then I'll go 3 inch beltless or 3 inch deficit beltless conventional. So on two separate days, I'll deadlift in a week, but my nervous system can handle that, because maybe working up knocking on the door of like 600 for reps, so opposed to 755, it's like I can recover adequately from that, but I'm still keeping the intensity high. But the threshold or the potential like damage, let's say, on like the musculoskeletal system, on ligaments, tendons, joints, all of that is still low, but I'm gassed by the end of it. Like I'm just taxing a different system. Like my abs are like cramping up by the end of it. And then once the belt goes on, I look at a different stimulus to start scaling.
And I mean, I can't even think of the last time I've seen you wear a belt.
I mean,
don't tie your shoes shoes or anything though.
So. I'm kind of a terrible example, but I didn't even own a belt until I had squatted 300 kilos.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think I really learned how to use it well, because I didn't get that much out of it with a belt.
You're a high bar squatter though, right? Do you find the carryover to be more so in a low bar position? Was that 300 kilo high bar or low bar?
Yeah, it was high bar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just feel like you're systemically stacking yourself in a better position.
Yeah, I also feel like when I didn't wear the belt, I think as I got better wearing the belt when I competed in powerlifting, my torso became a little bit stronger just by the fact that I was able to actually, like you're saying, like kind of my abdominal wall was a little bit stronger from having braced against the belt.
Yeah.
And probably also because the intensity was a little bit higher with the weights being slightly bigger, moving the bar down. But I mean, I never even noticed a difference when I put it on the first couple of times. Like, really, like the first couple of months, I don't think I got anything out of it. From a changing, still the same technique, high bar squat, but with a belt. As I got more into low bar squats, the belt made a bigger difference because I was obviously, you know, leaning over more. But
I think at best you'll get 30%, but I think that's a 30% increase of inner abdominal pressure, not a 30% increase of weight on bar the bar.
I was going to say that would be pretty it's tremendous. Like
a couple of suits.
I think that's kind of one of the big takeaways from it is there's a right way to use a belt. There's a way to just slap the belt on and kind of hang off of it. Yeah. So if you're going to use it, you have to be able to brace the right pattern, and the belt can help cue that by giving a little bit of feedback of something you can push into. And once you know how to do it right with a belt, then you can do it right without a belt and introduce some beltless, some dedicated beltless training, which is something I used to do for always the first month of my meat preparation was always done without a belt. And that was the time of highest frequency, highest volume, lowest intensity. Yeah. And I think that's probably the most appropriate time to use it, where the belt is not going to be the limiting factor in the work that you can do.
Yeah.
If your back is the limiting factor and the belt can assist that the back becomes the limiting factor at a certain percentage threshold. Well, if you're under that percentage threshold and the back's not the limiting factor now, maybe you can do more direct work for the legs. But I found it really interesting when you're talking about the oblique and the opposite adductor being tied in. Yeah. The last maybe 2-3 meets I did, I had kind of stopped doing that month of beltless training and have a ton of problems left adductor, right oblique. Mm. And that kind of never crossed my mind. So it was very likely that I got into, it seemed odd, this idea you were describing of super heavyweights having a bunch of weight in front of their body. But maybe I fall into that category. I had fallen into, that too much extension, pelvic rotation. And so it's kind of food for thought for myself of maybe bringing back more beltless training.
What's the best color of belt?
Oh, black. It's all black everything. The neon thing doesn't have a place in the gym. This is my neon outfit. Yeah, no.
If it's not neon, it shouldn't be on.
I like that. Yeah. Well, maybe we could have led with, no, you can't turn that into a t-shirt company. It's a lifestyle.
It's already a t-shirt company. Is it? Yeah. It went bankrupt in 1986.
It's coming back.
It's all coming back, right?
Full circle. I think a lot of really useful information there on how to implement the belt and everything. So good stuff there.
Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like powerlifters, weightlifters, and CrossFitters. Life insurance companies calculate your policy rates based on your nearest age, not your actual age, and rates increase as you get older. So lock in the best rate possible by getting a free quote today. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save our customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and you must qualify to get the special rate. Visit the website for more details there. Health IQ is the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting, and you can go visit healthiq.com/juglife. Use the promo code JUGLIFE to see if you qualify and get your free quote today.
You spend 1/3 of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable, and Casper Mattresses has provided all the support the human body needs in all the right places. Their breathable design helps you stay cool and regulates body temperature throughout the night. And their affordable prices are great because they cut out the middleman and sell directly to the consumer. You get a
100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial, so you can be sure of your purchase and make sure that you like the mattress with that. So start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase when you visit casper.com/juglife and use the code juglife at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that is $50 towards any mattress purchased at casper.com/juglife when you use the code juglife at checkout. And you could sleep on the same bed as me, but not actually the same one, the same type of bed as me. It would be much, much more expensive for that other idea. My next question is, what do you think, you know, there's so much information out there, mobility, movement, a real prevalence of the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, that mobility is like the buzzword, hot topic thing, and everyone's a fucking guru for it. What sets Jordan Shallow apart as a practitioner in this realm?
I got real nervous when Max did one of these. He's like, oh, I really want to listen to this.
I don't want to hear it.
No, I think it's just, I don't think I'm any different than anything else. It's just, I wear two hats, and sometimes I wear, like, I can put the practitioner aside, and I do that a lot. And I think being able to be empathetic with the people you work with rather than sympathetic, like, it's the difference between, oh, that must be tough, or, oh, yeah, no, I tore that too. Here's how you get back to squatting. I mean, it's just like training, just like coaching. It's all buy-in, right? There has to be proof of concept. And I think I might bring that more in this realm than most. It's like, and it's weird because I've had it explained to me that it's like the fact that I lift and compete and pursue strength and kind of do it, maybe not recklessly, but third attempt, if something goes, I don't care. I'll deal with it later. And it's health to a certain point from a physical standpoint, but on the platform, it's all up here. We do it to drive whatever, or like kind of scratch the itch. So I think being able to recognize that in a practitioner just betters the buy-in. I don't think my interventions are any, I don't know, I say this with hesitation, that my interventions are any different. I just think they're scaled differently, because it's like, I know the internal logical consistencies of the corrective exercise and the biomechanics, but, you know, if I give some of the guys I work with, like the yellow, like TheraBand thing, it's like a fly into an elephant's ass from a stimulus standpoint, right? Like, it's not even going to register on their radar when their nervous system has to hold up to 800 pounds in their back or 800 pounds in their hand numerous times a week. So it's like, okay, how do I take this founded in research and then extrapolate it out to a place it's never been before? And then try and use the principle of this research study or whatever, this intervention, and then try and make it applicable or useful to someone with such a high capability. Because, I mean, you guys read strength and conditioning research. It's like, what constitutes a well-trained college-age male? It's like,
right.
He lifted once. He posted about it on Instagram. And it's like, okay, that's the subjects I have are like, they're not. It's hard to even use the research at all. But I think I read more like biomechanics books and research, because if I can understand how it moves, then that anatomy doesn't change. Those tertiary muscle actions don't change. So if I can go that deep into it, then I can start to schematically work things as far as like a rehabilitation protocol for an athlete that I have. And two, it's like throw myself into the fire. I tore my sartorius before the last meet, like 3 weeks out. I just stood up out of the mono. I was like, oh, and I just had to do an inventory in my head. Like, okay, I'm still standing. It's not quad, it's not hamstring. Okay. Where does it hurt? Okay. It's like mid thigh and side. Okay. It's like kind of switch my knee in. It's like, I don't think it's my adductor. And then I started to go down. It's like, okay, that's sartorius. But I don't need it to squat. It's a secondary flexor, abductor, external rotator. Secondary, all of them. So I have a primary. As long as those are good and stable, we should be good. So that was my thought process going in. And knock on wood, I mean, it worked out. So
that whole thought went through your head. Between the time of unracking the bar and beginning the
descent. I just stood up and it was just like pop. It's like, shit, all right, what do I do? It's like, do I rack it? This is last squat session through. And this is the thing where it's like, I wear both hats and I probably wear them more to the side of the athlete than the side of the practitioner sometimes. But if that gives me better buy-in with the athlete, then...
I'd imagine with that too, it's kind of like, do as I say, not as I do.
To a certain extent, yeah. I think, I mean, it's a don't try this at home thing where it's like, you got to have... It's the mobility, the guru, the Instagram shit, the little X and check thing that's really big these days.
It's very big.
Yeah.
There's lines on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But it's, to me, it's just like, it's too binary, right? It's too black and white. Yeah. I think you try and, if you can educate people, like the oblique thing, like if you can educate someone on that, then they can do that inventory for themselves. So it's the difference, I guess the difference between, or how I try to practice is like, try and give it, like teach a man a fish, not give a man a mm-hmm. fish. Like my frequency as far as like follow-up visits with patients is really low. I'm trying to like give them the tools, like, okay, here's what it is. Here's how you move. When you move yourself, here's how you move when I move you. Here's like the dissonance and stability that I'm finding, either from active and passive or left, right, top to bottom, whatever.
What if fish doesn't fit your macros though?
Oh, jeez. I was on a roll too, man. It's just, you had to get it out. Yeah, I don't know, man. Avatar Nutrition.
It's kind of funny because you said something that I think is interesting. It reminded me of someone. Someone once told me that in weightlifting, he was talking about like professional weightlifting, that many people go into the gym to get their health. They go to the gym to become healthier. We go to the gym to give our health up. Hmm. And it's like the difference between, like you're saying, where you have somebody who's, you know, who's trying to perform at a high level. Yeah. So things aren't going to look perfect. They're not going to be right. There's going to be injuries because you're trying to be as far to one side as you possibly can. Everything is sacrificed for the sake of performance. Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like you're kind of working on that side where those kind of people who they're going to come in and be like, hey, I tore this or I tore that. Like, what do I do to keep this aspect of my performance improving? Or like, what can I do on that side rather than just saying, oh, you know, you tore your hamstring, like don't do anything. Just rest for 6 weeks or whatever. Just quit what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're built in such a way, like the tensegrity model of the body is so complicated. Like, they're trying to make robots in space that can adapt the way we adapt with movements.
What about those robots that are doing backflips? And
you see that?
You see that?
I'm sorry, what? I didn't. Are you going to show it?
Yeah,
I'll
look it up during the break.
It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah.
No, I just think, like, it's funny because there's two common, like, imageries that come along with, like, hardcore lifting.
Right.
And it's all marketing driven, but there's, like, the animal side and then there's the machine side. And it's like, this is where I want to be.
A robot animal?
Like a robot tiger? I want to be more the animal side. Like, it's being resilient, right? Like, the machine, one thing breaks and the whole thing falls apart.
Predator, Terminator. This is all I'm hearing. Wow. This is all I'm hearing.
It was all boiled down to that.
Do you want to be a robot, a Terminator Predator? $29.99. Send me an email.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the program.
No, I just think, like, building like just resiliency, I think, is the big thing. It's the difference between optimal and maximal.
Yeah.
Right. I hear optimal, I fucking lost me. You're done.
Right.
That's crunchy granola. That's BS. Your Fitbits, your Apple Watches. I don't need, because just as those things, those like external monitors, and that's the thing, you're giving people metrics that they don't know what it means. So mm-hmm. educate them, teach them to fish, right? And I mean, a little bit of a side, but again, this kind of goes to that bifurcation between the animal and the machine, where it's like a lot of people rely, like, don't even get me started, but like RPE scales. It's like, it doesn't matter how you feel. I don't care. Lift the weight, linear progression, like lift heavier weight to get stronger. So I don't even know what your question was. You lost me at Predator. And
I just like hearing you talk about robots and animals.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just getting me fired up.
Thing right about that.
Yeah, you know, the thing I really appreciate out of that sort of last section is bringing up very briefly the checkmark X situation. Yeah. And we're still trying to figure out how to put those on our pictures, but you know, one day we'll get that.
You know, it's a thing that unlocks if you do a certain amount of ass shots on Instagram. That's what it is.
Good to know.
Yeah.
We strive for that so much, is not to give simple prescription, but rather to inform of the principles behind that prescription.
In 60 seconds or less on an Instagram post. Yeah, have fun with that.
And it is a great challenge. But I think the people who watch and listen to our content really appreciate the step beyond. And I know for Max and myself and you know, Dr. Quinn, who we work with so much in these in this kind of realm, it's a very tough line to walk of seeing, you know, people with a check mark and an X or whatever it may be the most distilled information that loses its the real essence of it. And watch the likes and whatever just fucking go through the roof. And it's like, well, we're trying to get people to, you know, trying to draw them in for for the deeper step, you know, to not just dip their toe into the water. But
I just think, I mean, George Carlin said it best, the average person's an idiot and 50% of people are stupider than him, right? So it's like, but you'll draw the, you don't want those, you don't want to work with the people that'll buy into that, right? Like the big thing in, I mean, in my profession, being a chiropractor in the Bay Area, Yelp calls me probably once a week and they're awful. They're like the worst people in the world. They're just predators. They suck. So they call from Arizona.
Yeah.
So if I have friends in Arizona that have been trying to call me, I have not answered a call from Arizona.
I get the same calls,
Yeah, so it's like, but I mean, there's a saying. Like,
is it a 620 number?
I think it's a, I don't know the area code. I just,
I don't get a lot.
620.
This is sort of like 1-800 thing? Anyways. No. No, but like, there's like kind of a saying that Yelp ads give you Yelp patients, right? And I've had people, I mean, I'm on Yelp. I don't pay, it just sits there.
It's
a passive mode of advertising. But the people that come in from Yelp, and I put them through the rigor of my like physical examination, history taking. Oh yeah, no, I'll book an appointment next week. It's like, yeah, sure, I'll never see you again. Yeah. That kind of thing. And but that's the same thing with that. It's like there's a difference between accruing social capital and accruing actual capital. Yeah. Like then I think this is where we're after, and I think the likes and all that'll go the wayside.
It's frustrating, I think, from a standpoint of like, it seemed like, what, 15 years ago, there was like one or two things in town. Like there was one show in town that had information that was kind of, you could garner something from that. And there was other books and all this stuff. And then, you know, 10 years after that, maybe like 7 years ago, things had changed a lot. And a lot more people were coming out and saying, hey, here's better information. Here's like, here's the how-to. Here's like a really good, and I think Juggernaut was obviously a big part of that, but a lot of information giving out like, hey, this is like the underlying things you need to understand to learn how to train or learn these things. And it almost feels like the last couple of years have gone the other way, where people will take all of that information that was given and then just try to, like we said, simplify it as much as possible and distill it down to what can I say in two pictures, one with an X, one with a check. And it's not really it's not accurate. It's just not the entire picture, right? It's
making black and white issues that are, you know, for lack of a better term, may have like 50 shades of gray.
50 shades of gray.
And more on that topic when we return. But, so Jug Life viewers and listeners, congratulations, because we know that you are the people who are seeking more than just the check mark and the X and the black and white answer to more nuanced problems.
Oh, Jesus. Really?
Do we say nuanced a lot?
Did we say
you it? You don't.
Carrie, commence. There was a lot of comments recently, but
I didn't even notice. Yeah.
and part of that deeper understanding goes into Max's book, The Weightlifting Technique Triad, in which he's not just saying that this is the best technique or that is the best technique, because we know that your bodies are different, your strengths and training histories are different, and the way that your technique is going to develop might not look exactly like someone that you watch on YouTube or Instagram. So his book, The Weightlifting Technique Triad, helps you better understand the principles behind what is effective, efficient weightlifting technique. So we'll take a minute. You can learn a little bit more about that. And then we are back with the Muscle Doc, Jordan Shallow. All right, so we're back with Jordan Shallow. Just had a lot of great information about belts and deeper understanding of training, all this stuff. And so I want to talk about some projects that you've got going on. So your main deal.
Oh, geez. I have one?
Maybe.
All right, let's
correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm interested to see.
Prescript.
Yeah, prescript.com.
Yes. Tell us what that is, how it can help.
Sure. I mean, it's basically like, it's personalized, scalable, kind of turnkey interventions for corrective exercise. Now, we're pretty much performance-based, but usually with a decrease in performance, pain is often a correlating factor there. So, I mean, 80% of coming to a conclusion is taking a detailed history. So we offer personalized programming. So you work with me or my my business partner, also a chiropractor, Dr. Jordan Junta. He's an Olympic lifter out of Santa Clara, NorCal, CrossFit regionals. Jeez, last 4 years in a row, he's doing well. He's going to go to Wodapalooza in January. He's just a little pocket rocket. Like, he's all of 160 pounds soaking wet. So he takes a more like the Olympic lifting side, right, as far as like, because what we try and do is we try and scale movements from a corrective standpoint, not just on like the needs of the athlete, but also the demand of the sport. So we try and pair it together in a way that you can get a really good complement as far as that like scaling of that stimulus for whatever your top end of that stimulus is going to be. So that's kind of our main programming focus, is the personalized side. But we do offer based off, I mean, common things present commonly, right? So we have programs specific for upper body, lower body. We have a midline strength program and also a platform ready, which is more, it's full body, but it follows that like SBD swap bench dead with 2 recovery days based off working with, you know, hundreds of powerlifters at this point, and the kind of the imbalances. Like, I look at it this way. It's programming for what really matters. Like, if you come off a meet and it's like, you failed, by your definition, you failed your squat because your quads are too weak. So it's like, all right, here come the front squats, here come the safety bar squats, or whatever the ancillary movement of choice is going to be to build the strength of the quads. But if you're 3 weeks out from a meet.
Belt squats, that's what we do.
That's our thing. It's so hot right now.
Yeah. Who do you think made it hot?
That's true. These guys.
Mad Max. Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. When did that? We'll talk later.
Always. I don't know why Pitchark hasn't been just raining dozens Pitchark of sponsorship dollars at us.
No royalty checks.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You're welcome, Pitchark.
Ingrates.
Edit out the Pitchark. Just beep right over where it says Pitchark.
But yeah, so they spend a lot of time, powerlifters, because they're so objectively focused on numbers, right? The one lift that matters is the total. So they're looking to build that. And let's take the squat, for example, where we have like, most people can break down by their technique what each muscle group contributes to the overall 100% of that movement, right? So if they think, okay, my quads are 35% of the movement, hypothetically, and I'm getting 30% out of my quads, and that's where I failed. But say like 3 weeks before the meet, they like sprain their SI joint, or they like hurt their knee or something like that. Something that is just like this magical unicorn of injury that just exists in like the periphery, and there's nothing you can do about it. Shit happens. It's like, put ice and ibuprofen and you'll be fine. Where it's like, it has to be more sophisticated than that. There are patterns that lead to that. It's just because you don't know it exists doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So based off that, we look at like the common pitfalls of the real things that hinder programming. Because think of that equation that, you know, 35% quads, 30% hamstrings, 20% upper back, however you want to break it up. Think of it an equation in brackets, right? And this is as mathematical as I can get in my life, so bear with me. But on the other end of the bracket is this magical injury unicorn that just exists. If you don't solve for this and make this one, this equation, whatever finite details you try and change and alter to improve that 30% to 35% or that 15% to 20%, if you're multiplying out by 0.5 because, you know, your elbows hurt so bad because your external rotation, abduction, and extension of your shoulders so poorly that after you're done your low bar squats, you can't bench. So as you peak that intensity of your squatting, you get getting so much torque through a hinge joint at the elbow that's not being accommodated at the ball and socket joint of the shoulder that you can't bench 3 weeks out, and you hit your opener and that's it. It's like, yeah, all those like board presses you did, all those accessory movements, it doesn't mean anything. So it's like, we really try and focus on programming for what really matters as far as isolating rate limiters. Now, a lot of people, you know, are ironclad and resilient, and they'll train the triceps and they'll get through a training program fine, and they'll be able to express that increase of that small percentage to a value of 1 on the outside of the equation. But a lot of people in powerlifting neglect that the stability side, or the mobility of stability that are prerequisites to build strength and express it fully. So that's a long answer to a short question, but that's what we focus on.
Have you ever tried to buy the URL to stabilitywad.com?
You know what? I mentioned this before, because K-Star was at the last meet, and I would go supplewaterbuffalo.com. That's kind of my MO.
we're more in the tender tiger lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. That is a lifestyle. Let me tell you. The tender
tiger. But I think that's probably a bar on the Castro.
For sure.
That's going to need a lot to bear few.
Jordan's very popular in the cast, bro.
Bears. Okay, never mind. As you were. And you have some other awesome information with prescript.com, and you've got some other new projects and roles that you're taking on, some new locations where people can be serviced by you.
Is this a Tender Tiger thing? No. So Jesse Burdick, Powerwad and CSA Gym, they're going to be out of Dublin, California, a couple times a month to start, and we'll see how we go from there. But Boss Barbell is home for now. So that's one new development. Two, started rugby coach with Stanford. So strength and conditioning coach for the Stanford rugby team, men's and women's. So that'll kind of kick off in the new year.
And has Stanford grown the balls to play Cal rugby again? Because I know that they, I know that they had given up on that for a while.
I think they're on the schedule this year. Yeah. But I mean, does any team have the balls to play Cal? I mean, it's essentially the national team.
Yeah. Well, the greatest college sport dynasty probably ever.
Yeah, they're like the Mighty Ducks.
They are like the Mighty Ducks of rugby. The Mighty Ducks. Excellent.
Probably. Except minus that big loss they had to Iceland. I wonder how they were able to come back. So
peculiar.
Maybe a question to be answered another day.
Peculiar.
I went to Ireland Fiji rugby when I was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. We're just over there for that seminar.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
The Fijian team has
Fijians on it.
Yeah, a lot of big Usos on there. a lot of guys. I'm like, if that dude stopped running 10 miles a day, I bet he can squat a lot.
Yeah.
Like,
well, who's the guy coming out of Jeza?
Jeza Uepa.
Yeah.
He's from Nauru.
Right. He's that guy. I heard there was a guy from Nauru. That must be him.
Or Odell Manuel, who's the.
He's a freak.
Yeah. Best powerlifter ever from Australia. Maybe Alex Simon just broke his total, but he was a national team player for a professional, I don't know, it was rugby league or rugby union in New Zealand, weighing about 90 to 100 kilos, and now is 150 kilo, 155 kilo.
His ability to handle heavy volume is unbelievable.
He's very strong, but he's had a lot of injury problems, which hopefully he can come back from, because one of the nicest dudes ever.
I remember.
Super nice. His hands are so big and thick that Ed Cohen told me the first time that I was over there to compete against Odell, he's like, Chad, have you seen how big this guy's hands are?
If Ed
Cohen says that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's something.
You know, catcher's mitts for hands.
Ed is really into guys' hands.
that should be a lot of fun with Stanford Rugby. Tons of good information in here. Everything. Check out his websites, and we'll give you more about that in a minute. If you like the Jug Life podcast and are smart, good-looking, which almost all of our listeners are,
that's true.
Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We would really appreciate that. Write us something funny and or nice, and maybe we'll read it on the air, and you can get a free T-shirt or something. Like RawBert88, it's like Raw Powerlifting, and I'm assuming his name is Robert, who says, best podcast ever. 5 stars. Every time I watch a new episode, I become more and more jealous of the lucky people who get to experience all the greatness of Team Juggernaut in person. Best info, decent jokes, great parodies, and so handsome. Well, thank you, Robert. We appreciate that. Send me an email at chad@jtsstrength.com, and I'll get you out a shirt or a hat or something like that. Beyond that, we were always proud of our YouTube content created by the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. So make sure to subscribe and see our content every week. Two to three videos a week on powerlifting, weightlifting, nutrition, movement, maybe a little bit of mindset sprinkled in from time to time. And of course, the video episodes of the Jug Life podcast, so you don't just have to hear the dulcet tones of the Jug Life Jazz Hour, but you can also watch our faces as we say these words. If you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, or super total, check out juggernautcoaching.com, and you can see all of our different levels of coaching there. Jordan, where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so best place would be www.prescript.com, so that's prescript.com. Instagram is @the_muscle_doc. I should really know that better. Podcasts, RX Radio on iTunes and Spotify, if I'm not mistaken. If you're in the Bay Area, again, practice out of Boss Barbell and CSA, so Mountain View and Dublin. I think that's it. I'm just shy of giving my home address at this point, where you can find me.
Like, you didn't tell people, like, where you're getting your coffee in the morning, what time that normally is?
So yeah, I know, you know, Pete's, you there. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
In the Castro. You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook. Or if you have questions about the Juggernaut online programming, it's max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. This was the Jug Life Podcast. You can find us on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, the iHeartRadio app, and of course at thejuglife.com. Thank you for watching and listening, and we'll see you next week.